climate refugees, the movements thereof are looking to rival or indeed supersede the kind of refugee movements we saw after World War II. Just how unfortunately necessary was this announcement from the UN?
Oh, yes, it's very necessary. Even if I could mention last week's UN Human Rights Committee communication, which recognised that Kiribati, which is a low-lying island in the Pacific, will in the next few years become inhabitable. So in addition to the announcement, there's been some jurisprudence from the UN Human Rights Committee. And I think this should propel industrialised nations to then look at their carbon emissions.
Do we see much reaction from world leaders so far?
Not to my knowledge. In our region, though, I think, again, going back to the Human Rights Committee decision, Tessa Toa, which was a citizen of Kiribati who tried to get asylum from New Zealand. I think that has perhaps more repercussions because it will involve individuals actually going to the United Nations. Sometimes it's difficult, I think, when you've got a more broad-ranging statement, but when you've got jurisprudence, when you've got litigation, I think that will be the change maker.
Well, I guess the difficulty here in terms of, as you say, broad sweeping statements is Kiribati and many of the islands in the Pacific, they are under immediate threat from climate change. This is upending their lifestyles, upending their homelands. Really, it's a terrible, terrible thing to see. But, you know, you could almost make the argument here in Australia, in certain regions of Australia, after the bushfire season we've had, our lives are under threat by climate change and its effects. Is there a real indication of how, you know, under threat will be kind of, your life being under threat will be determined and defined?
Yes, again, the UN Human Rights Committee has recognised that climate change, and this is a quote, is a pressing and serious threat to the right to life. So the right to life is protected under Article 6 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. So the UN recently has recognised the link between climate change and the right to life. But of course, what differs, I guess, in relation to climate change refugees is that there's an argument it's a socioeconomic situation. That is that, you know, you can make those people adapt or you can provide them with food. You don't necessarily have to bring them to a country. So in the instance of Kiribati, I guess New Zealand might argue that they can assist those people on Kiribati to adapt rather than those people necessarily seeking asylum elsewhere.
I mean, part of the reason I ask that question, of course, is here in Australia, look, I don't think you need to be apolitical to say the refugee situation, the asylum seeker situation we've seen here in Australia, the way the government's dealt with it, and indeed past governments have dealt with it, has not exactly been sterling. It has brought us into conflict with the United Nations multiple times in the past. So in terms of these kinds of reactions, are we going to sort of see these things strongly defined? You know, if you are going to help people adapt, what situation they need to be in for that and what the adaptation might look like?
Yeah, sure. I think if there is a thing called the UN Global Compact on Migration, which was agreed to last year, and there's also one on refugees, and that again does mention climate change. So I think that's a matter of countries coming together under the auspices of the UN and using science, saying, well, Kiribati is going to be uninhabitable in 5 years' time. We need to take steps, however that can be, to stop that. And if not, perhaps then those islands or the people on those islands can be taken elsewhere. And that would have to be something that the UN does. I mean, the UN's used to doing that. In terms of resettlement, when there's something like the Syrian conflict, they're used to dealing with those humanitarian emergencies. But by and large, they are temporary in nature. And the problem with climate change is that once an island is uninhabitable, it is uninhabitable. Around 110,000 people live on Kiribati alone, and that's quite a large number of people to deal with.
In terms of this this case of the Kiribati man and his family, and indeed many others in the Pacific that are facing this kind of situation, have we had a real look at the kind of psychological impacts of losing your homeland or potentially losing your homeland in future that a lot of the people are facing?
Yeah, I think the Human Rights Committee have looked at the fact that you've got to have a right to a dignified life. So I guess in terms of, again, having to uproot people from their homeland, obviously that would key into the decision as to where to send them, in terms of it's somewhere similar, I guess, where they could, you know, you wouldn't necessarily send them to a very cold climate. So in terms of moving them, the refugees themselves would hopefully have some agency and some input into the country to which they were sent.
Well, obviously, it's let's face it, it's an unfortunate situation, but it is a situation we are going to have to deal with in future. It's the new reality. Maria, thank you. I do appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you very much.